having your focus on your career and having your focus on the industry, but also being able to step away is very important. I think one of the things I like the most about our career is once you finish at the end of the day, you know, there aren't often emails to chase or things to follow up. So I find it quite easy to shut off. Although once you get into practice ownership, that does change. It definitely gets trickier to have that work-life balance once you go down the...
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the CPD Junkie podcast. My name is Madeline Duff, and I'm an associate dentist. I work in Preston, Melbourne, and I'm a graduate of Melbourne Dental School 2018. So when I signed up to study dentistry, I thought, like most of us, that my career as a dentist would be drilling and filling, occasionally taking out the odd tooth with a few crowns sprinkled in over the top. But on my first day as an associate dentist, I was working in an eight-chair practice where the principal dentist was trained in Invisalign, implants, braces, surgical extractions, and full mouth rehabilitations. And I soon realized that, one, graduating dental school was only the beginning of my learning as a dentist, and two, that my career as a dentist could take me to a whole lot of places. So my podcast series for CPD Junkie will explore what options are out there for us dentists and for those of you looking to study dentistry. We all start our graduate careers as associate dentists, but what does the future look like and where could our career take us? Considering a specialty? How about locum work in tropical Queensland? Or you could pivot and become a healthcare strategy consultant. So over the next 8 episodes, I will speak with our dental colleagues about where then their dental career has taken them. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my first guest of the series, Dr. Lauren Fowler.
Thanks, Maddie.
Hi, Lauren. Welcome.
This is an unusual context for us. Usually our relationship is strictly non-work related.
So I know, exactly.
Slight variation on our normal relationship.
So good. Thank you for coming in. My Zoom meeting room. So Lauren, I just want you to tell us a little bit about you to start off with. Now, I know you're a general dentist. You started your career doing a bit of everything. And then now I want to know what sort of dentistry are you doing now?
So I graduated dental school from Adelaide University in 2013. I was from Melbourne originally. So as soon as I graduated, came straight back to Melbourne. That was, as was always the plan. And I was actually introduced by one of my uni tutors, an endodontist, Dr. Jack Lynn, who was a really fabulous tutor during my time at Adelaide Uni. And in my final year, I said, look, I'm looking to move back to Melbourne. Do you know any dentists in Melbourne that I could perhaps get in touch with and speak to about work when I get back? And he threw out a couple of names, and one of the names was Dr. Larry Bench. And so I reached out to Dr. Bench. I was still in my final year, actually, and I was home for a week, I think, before exams during swap back. And so I went and met with him at the end of my final year and sort of said, you know, I'm looking for work. What would you, is there anything you recommend I do, or, you know, would you like to hire me? And he had said that, you know, his, the practice, which was called Bond Street Dental at the time, that he owned was quite specialized, did a lot of, as you sort of mentioned, a lot of full mouth rehab, a lot of dental implants. Also, there was a heavy focus on all on four dental implants in the clinic then as well. And so he said, you're too junior to have a job here, go away and work somewhere else for a couple of years, get your sort of general dentistry skills up, and then come back and talk to me. So I perhaps took his advice a little bit too literally. And I got 2 jobs as a grad. One in Hampton with a guy called Gary Rosengarten, and another one at Ashburton Family Dental. And they were both really good for different things, but just, you know, I spent those first 2 years grinding and, you know, like learning, not grinding my teeth. I mean, probably a bit of that too. But just learning those really basic and fundamental skills, how to put on a rubber dam, you know, all those things that they sort of maybe glaze over a little bit. At university, but also just the basics of private practice, because, you know, all of our training in dental school is in the public system, and you very quickly realize when you graduate that you get into, you know, private clinics and life is quite different, and patients can be quite different, and the way that things run is quite different. So that was a really good solid 2 years of just, you know, a lot of CPD, and I was quite lucky that both of the guys that I worked for were really keen to sort of mentor and help my learning. And I think that's probably the first thing, the first takeaway for people today is, you know, you need to be able to, or you need to do your best to try and find people who are willing to teach and mentor. Because I know a lot of clinicians who get out to work and they're working in clinics where maybe there's not a senior dentist rostered on the same day as them, or they don't have that kind of relationship where they're, you know, feel like they can ask questions or feel like they have the support of other clinicians in the practice to help them out, you know, whether it be with treatment planning, whether it be with a difficult extraction or things like that. So finding somewhere, especially in those early years when you're really supported, is so, so important. And so that's what I did. I did that for 2 years. And then I called Larry, called him on a Friday. I hadn't really spoken to him for that 2 year period. And I said, Larry, I've done my 2 years. That's what you told me to do. I'm ready to come and work for you. And he said, okay, come in on Monday. And so I did. I went and saw him on the Monday and you know, started work with him at Bond Street within a couple of weeks. And that was probably the biggest sink or swim moment, I think, career-wise, because it was a big jump just in terms of the type of dentistry that I was used to in general practice. And then, you know, suddenly the style of dentistry that we were doing in this much more complex treatment plan sort of practice. And so that was, it was almost like another learning curve. It was kind of like how I felt coming out of uni and starting with general, you know, dentistry, and then moving into a clinic that did a lot more sort of implants and crown and bridge. So it was another sort of big jump again. And so again, it was almost just continuing that grind, learning the ropes. And pretty early I was thrown into doing a lot of, you know, full arch implant restoration. So I started out with restorative, not doing any surgical. Larry sort of said, I'm not going to let you touch a scalpel for the first couple of years, which was exactly how it went. And so I really spent a lot of time learning the pros side of all on four. That's where my sort of, and it tied in with what I really liked, because pros was always what I'd enjoyed through uni and in the early sort of stages anyway. So focused a lot on all on four pros in that time. And then at the same time, I was doing a lot of digital smile design stuff. Did the DSD residency with Christian Coachman. Also went to Portugal to train with Professor Melo in all on four that year. So that was, there was a lot of learning that was happening.
Which is how I heard of you. I saw you on Instagram going to Portugal and getting, or maybe it was just getting the youngest DSD award, youngest digital smile design, you know, master award. And I was thinking, who is this girl? Got to be friends with her. So good. So how old were you?
How many years out? The first time you reached out? How rude of me.
You did. You left me on red and she never replied.
I'm one of my best friends and I feel terrible about it, but it all worked out.
But this is a podcast on the lesson of perseverance. Message again and she will reply. And that's how we became friends. But how many years out were you when you first did, you know, the digital smile design course?
I went and did the course, I think 2017. So I was maybe 5 years out. I started at Bond Street 2015, I think. So yeah, I would have been doing, I had started doing sort of cosmetic cases within the clinic, but then wanted to sort of go back and have more of the theoretical knowledge. I've been very lucky to have worked in clinics where I've had a lot of hands-on experience, and I've always done things backwards, which is not the norm, but that's how things have happened for me. So I get the clinical exposure from the other clinicians in the practice, which I appreciate that I'm very lucky and very, you know, I've been very blessed to have worked with clinicians who were willing to give me that exposure and let me watch and, you know, also watch me do things as well. So finding a place of work where that is an option to you is so, so important. So my way of learning has always been learn the practical first. And then I've sort of gone back and done the theory-based courses and applied it to what I already have seen and what I know, which works quite well because I'm a very visual learner. So until I see it, it doesn't really make sense. I can read about it 10 times, but once I see it and see how things are done for me as a visual learner, that works. Makes,
yeah. Yeah.
And so I found that that has worked really well. But I think a lot of people, what they'll do is get the theory, you know, go to a course, a CPD course, and get the theory first and then sort of apply it. Whereas I.
Yes. Or potentially not apply it as well.
Or not apply it if you don't have the opportunity to.
Yeah.
Which is a big problem as well. You know, we've all done that. You go to a course and you think, yeah, I'm going to go home and back to my clinic and implement all these things. And
yeah.
After a few weeks, you've sort of forgotten
about it. So having the foundations there, yeah, to a certain extent before is good.
I've sort of done it the other way, where I've watched and observed others do things hands-on and then gone back and understood the principles. And for me, that sort of makes sense in my brain for a reason.
And did you apply a similar sort of way of going about things when you were doing the implant pros, or how did you approach that?
So it was actually the same again, really. I started just watching and learning with Dr. Benj and absorbing and then started doing things for him. And eventually came to a time where he was doing most of the surgical side and I was managing all of the pros. So we were and are a general clinic. So we're not periodontists or oral surgeons, but we run a little bit differently in the way that this, you know, often one implant surgeon is doing the surgical part, and then sometimes we'll have a prosthetic dentist who's managing the prosthetic part. And again, that comes from the model in Portugal at Professor Melo's clinic, where they actually have completely separate, almost completely separate surgical and pros teams. And so each are sort of highly trained in their specific area, which is not really that common here. I think here it tends to be the person who's placing the implants is always restoring them. And I think in most clinics that probably works. But for us, just in terms of, because we do so much all on four and a lot of volume, having those teams separated has worked really well for us as well. But I think if you're going into the, you know, down the track of implant surgery, you've got to have a good handle on the pros side first.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask is, do you think, and I imagine that you do, is because you know where you want the teeth to sit at the end goal and how important their positioning is, it has changed the way that you now approach the surgical aspect?
Definitely. So I think the technical term is prosthetically driven treatment planning. So it's all well and good to put four implants into the bone, but if they're not in a position where we can then restore them effectively or restore them in a way that's going to give the patient longevity with their prosthesis, then you're setting yourself up for failure. So
yes,
and it's funny, I think that particularly all on four, but dentistry generally, when you get into doing volume, and this is something that Larry will, you know, whenever we run courses on full arch implants, he will say all the time, the more full arch implants you're doing, or the more crowns you're doing, or the more Invisalign you're doing, the more likely you are to run into complications.
Yes.
And so it's not just about being able to do the surgery and make the teeth and have the understanding. It's also about, okay, well, if there are complications, what the hell do I do? And how do I manage that? So
yes,
you don't just need to have the understanding of the process and the procedure. You've also really got to have the understanding of, okay, what happens if it all goes wrong?
Yes.
And I think that's probably something that when we are learning and when we are doing CPD, that maybe we're not focusing on enough. Is what to do, you know, pitfalls and problems what to do when you run into trouble.
And in terms of, you know, your transition from, you were doing the pros, implant pros stuff, now I understand you've moved obviously more into the surgical aspect. So, I mean, you and I have a very different idea of what a great day is. Yours is donning the scrubs and getting in there. So what does your sort of typical day look like now?
Yeah, it kind of depends a little bit on the day, but the week tends to be structured pretty the same. So we will have 2 to 3 operating days. Typically Monday to Wednesday are our operating days. And then Thursday and every second Friday I'll be in clinic consulting and also doing other parts of dentistry.
Yeah.
And I sort of tend to focus those days on non-all on four things. Because I really love crown and bridge.
Yeah.
I probably, my love for crown and bridge I think because I did so much with DSD and I worked really hard to hone those skills. So even though it's a lot of all in four, I don't really want to give that up. Also, I'm just a person that loves variety. So I like to be, you know, doing lots of different things. And also too, we get so many patients who come in for a consultation and they think they need all on four and they just, and they don't, you know, their perio is good. They've maybe missing a couple of one or two teeth or, you know, maybe they need a porcelain rehab and some single implants. And so I think you've really got to be able to offer that to them as well, because they come to see you for your opinion.
That's something you complete at Next Mile as well. So you've obviously got the implant center, but also a general dental clinic too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm also the type of clinician, I like to do most of the parts of my patient's treatment. So I'm sort of a bit of a generalist in the sense of if, you know, if they need a single crown, then I'll do that single crown for them. If they need a full archival and four, then I'll do that. And I don't know whether that's going to change as I move forward, but at the moment I'm just enjoying that variety. Yes. So on a surgical day, we start at 7:00. We're here at 7:00 and patient is asleep by 7:30. We're so lucky here. We have two full, and Maddie, you've come and scrubbed in with me. But we have two fully fledged operating theatres. So it almost looks a lot like a hospital. They're very large rooms with beds. We don't operate on dental chairs. So they're fully, you know, flat lying theater beds. Mm-hmm. And there are very specific things that we've had to do to sort of make sure that from a safety perspective, that the operating theaters are really safe for our patients, because there are a lot of clinics that will perform general anesthetic just in a dental chair. But for the level, the volume of patients that we're seeing, but also just from a safety perspective. So if you have any sort of medical emergency while they're under general anesthetic, we're able to roll patients out on the bed. There are also really specific things around having ramps so that if ambulance need to come, anything like that, they can easily get in and out. So we've really built the facility with that in mind, which I think is quite rare. So we're very lucky to sort of have that set up.
When you're saying, you know, you do the general anesthetics throughout the day, how many general anesthetics would you be running? Obviously it's case dependent, but like on an average day.
So we'll do anywhere between 3 and 6 arches of all on four in a day. So depending on whether a patient is just having an upper all on four or they're having an upper and lower. So yesterday, for example, we had 3 patients who were all having upper and lower all on four. So we started 7:30. That case would be finished by sort of around 10 o'clock, and then typically half an hour to wake the patient, half an hour to put the next patient to sleep. So then the case might be from 11 till 12:30 or 1. Again, we have about 45 to an hour between cases, and then 2 till 5 for the third case as an example.
And then you obviously have a recovery room as well within the clinic.
So we have RNs on staff as well. So they assist, the anesthetic nurses assist the anesthetist. And then once the patient, while the patient is in recovery, they're also in recovery with the patients as well. So the patients are always being monitored. And then once they are recovered, then we will take the next case through with the anesthetist and start the next general anesthetic. And typically our process is for patients who have their all on four surgery, either the first and second case in the day, they'll actually receive their temporary teeth same day. If they're the third case in the day, then they'll receive the temporary teeth next day.
The next day. And so obviously, I mean, I've been in before, it's a huge setup. One thing I wanted to ask you about as well is that in the last sort of 6 to 12 months, you've now come on board at Next Mile and taken part in ownership as well. So how has that changed your day-to-day work? Because now you're not an associate, you are an owner. So what's that like?
So when we moved, we left, Larry and I left Bond Street, and we opened this clinic in Hawthorne called Next Mile, and we joined the Next Mile, or we actually created the Next Mile Australia group with Tony Rotondo in Brisbane and Rob Deleuze clinic in Sydney. And then also we have other clinics Australia wide. So the boys and my very good friends from uni, Evan Jones, Nick Wood and Ed Pitts in Adelaide with Dr. Ian Bills. We've got a team in Perth. We all act as surgical super centers. So what I explained about patients coming in for their surgery, and then we also can manage the pros side here as well. or we also have some accredited partners who refer in, so we perform the surgery for them here.
Yes.
Maybe they're not interested in implant surgery, but then they will manage the prosthetic side closer to where the patient lives. So we have them in a lot of regional centers. So then patients just come for their surgery here, and then the rest of their treatment is managed closer to home, which is really handy for the patients not having to travel and that sort of thing. I forgot what your question was, though.
My question was, well, obviously, in managing all of these moving parts, your role now with ownership, what does that mean for you?
So a bit of a learning curve again. I feel like dentistry is just a whole lot of learning curve. You know, you feel like you master one thing and then you jump into the next thing and you start again learning. So very quickly realized that in dental school, we didn't learn anything about finance, human resources. Yeah. People management. Those really things that are key to running a business, which I think if there were anyone listening who's in any way involved in the universities, please start teaching dental graduates how to run business, because of course there are a lot of corporates, but it's very common for a single or, you know, maybe two or three dentist partnership to own a small practice with zero understanding in business and finance, because we're just taught it. And it's funny, I actually spoke at my school's careers night a few nights ago. They asked me to come and be in the medical and dental sort of discussion for potential high school students who want to go into those fields. And the first thing I said to them was, if you're coming from a degree like Melbourne Uni where you've got the opportunity to do breadth subjects, don't go and do the wine tasting breadth subject. Actually utilize that for something that might be of use to you, like a finance or an accounting course. So
So not food for a healthy planet, like I did.
So the first thing I did was signed up for a finance course just to go and learn the ropes, because I was, you know, I was a math science brain. I did straight math science except for French in high school. And so I had not really done anything in that area, and felt really I wanted to learn new things and have a better understanding, because I think then you're better equipped to make those sorts of financial decisions and practice management decisions. So that was probably the biggest learning curve. I think day to day, the main shift is really that you become, I mean, so much more involved in decision making. So go from someone who makes recommendations to things that you think might be helpful to being the ones who actually have to make those decisions.
Yes.
And so that can be a little bit daunting initially.
Yeah.
Sort of got to trust yourself with those decisions and trust your judgment.
I guess you're so fortunate because you're in a clinic where there are people who have experience in business management and ownership. So again, you've really gotten so lucky. Well, you've earned it, but you're also lucky that, you know, you're somewhere where you can have mentors in the business management side of things as well.
Definitely. Our GM is a trained lawyer. So, and our practice manager and GM is a trained lawyer. So that's a huge help. One of our other execs is non-clinical, so he's purely finance. And that, again, so helpful. So I've been able to learn a lot from their sort of areas of specialty. And they're happy for me to sort of take the lead on the clinical side, because that's not their area of expertise. So we've sort of built a team where we're lucky that we have people in all of those sort of specific roles. But I think if you're in a, you know, single owner practice, that's a lot for one person.
You have to wear all those hats.
You've got to wear all of those hats, and so you've got to understand all of those, or at least outsource to people who can advise you on those things. And I think those types of specialists who can advise on those things exist. So during a buy-in process, I engaged an advisor who helped with the contract side of things, because I wasn't exactly sure about what I should be looking for in a contract when you're buying into a practice. And so there are specialists around who can help you navigate that whole process, because, most of the time you've never done it before and it's all very new and scary.
That's really good advice.
And I was lucky that, the contracts that were presented to me were very fair, and the people that I was buying into the practice with, I'd worked for a really long time. But I think you can maybe hit a snag sometimes if you don't know the person. So if you're just buying a clinic from someone that you've never worked for, or maybe you've not worked for very long, or someone that you don't know very well. So again, just having some guidance and engaging the right people to help you navigate that if you're not sure about it is very important.
And when you first started being a dentist, when did you kind of think, oh, I'd be interested in practice ownership? And did you tell Larry about it on that first phone call, or how did this end up coming about?
I actually don't think I was that upfront, because I was so junior that I just don't think that was really on my radar. It probably should have been. Also at that time, there were other dentists in the clinic who were more senior than me. So I had just envisaged that they would be, you know, next line. So it was not that it wasn't on my radar. I just hadn't sort of seen a clear path when I first joined that particular practice. Then once we left, the path sort of became a lot more clear. And I think too, by that time I had realized that I was a lot more interested in the surgical side. When I started with Larry, I wasn't one of those people that was like, yes, surgery is for me. I know I want to do surgery. Surgery is my passion. I really just sort of loved pros and started doing a lot of the all on four pros. And so the natural progression was then for me to move into surgery. But I don't like to say I fell into it, but I was never, it was never my sort of end game goal when I joined that clinic to be doing all on four surgery. I had never sort of viewed it in that way. I just knew that it was a really great practice and a very well-renowned practice with a great group of clinicians. And I saw it as a really good learning opportunity, and opportunity for my career to grow. I don't ever think I thought that it would go this far.
This far. Because I mean, you lecture now as well, don't you?
Yep, doing some lecturing as well.
Many hats. And because this is also, I should say, and this is a CPD course, have you got any courses upcoming?
Yes, plenty. So I started my lecturing, I don't know if I'd call it a career.
It is a career.
First for Philips. So Philips approached me when I was, when I worked at Bond Street Dental. It was a very cosmetic sort of dental clinic. I hate that phrase, but for want of a better word. So I was doing a lot of whitening, and so they approached me to, they needed someone to sort of take over their webinars. At that time it was all still webinars, because I think we'd just come into COVID, and so they wanted someone to run some online CPD during COVID. And so that's sort of where my lecturing started. And then now, as I've moved more, I'm still lecturing for Philips, actually. I love it, even though I'm not doing so much whitening myself anymore. But really just enjoy like the teaching side, I guess. So still doing a lot of webinars for Philips. I've got a couple of them coming up. But now most of my lecturing is with Noble Biocare, and also with Malo Education, who are an education sort of group that's linked with Next Smile Australia. So Tony Rotondo runs a lot of his lecture series through Malo Education, Larry and myself, and we have a couple of others as well. And so we have a few different types of courses. I focus more so on the prosthetic courses. So I run a course on sort of all on four pros, which I sort of tell people is almost like the entry level. You know, if you're thinking about, I've restored maybe a few single implants, I think I might be able to tackle a full arch implant restoration, just the restorative side. Of course, we go through the surgical principles, because I think you've got to have that understanding. A really solid, just one day sort of dip your toe in, get a bit of an understanding, get a sense of whether you think all on four pros might be for you or not. And also pick up some, my favorite part of the day is at the end, and I spoke about complications earlier, but I talk about all four pros complications. And the main ones to look out for and how to avoid them, which I think, as I said, if you're starting out with something new, you've got to understand the complications. And how to manage them. Then we also have, for people who are more into implant surgery, we run a cadaver course every year in November in Sydney. Which is a 3-day course with Larry, Benj, Lydia Lim, who's an oral surgeon in Sydney. And then we have a few of the clinicians, the surgical clinicians from the different NextSmart clinics around Australia who all come to teach as well. And so it's 2 full days of lecturing. And then on the third day, we go into the cadaver lab and the participants actually have the opportunity to perform the all on four on the cadavers. So we're very lucky that people have, you know, kindly donated their bodies for use for education. So people really get a lot out of that course. It's a bigger investment, obviously, because it's But for people who are wanting to get into all on four surgery, then that is 100% a great place to sort of start.
And so that's run with Noble Biocare.
They support the course. They provide the implants.
Yeah.
And they the Nobel staff are there as well to assist. Yes. And because, you know, Nobel, we have a really great relationship with Nobel Biocare. And of course, Professor Malo, who invented all on four, invented it in conjunction with Nobel Biocare and using the Nobel Biocare implants. So that's the way that all on four was invented. And those implants were specifically designed for all on four. And so all of the data that exists around all on four, all of the most long-term data, you know, we've got nearly 30 years worth of data on all on four now, but it all relates to those very specifically designed Nobel Biocare implants. So, you know, when you're thinking about full arch implants, of course, really important to remember that that it was invented with that specific type of implant in mind.
Yes. Have you met him before?
Yes. So I went to Portugal and trained with Professor Malo in 2017. And then he comes to Australia a couple of times a year, and then we at Nobel Biocare events and things overseas as well.
So if you're interested in implants, Lauren is a good person to know. She has all the connects. So obviously you've been traveling with your CPD, but I also want to know, with all of these hats that you wear and managing work-life balance, lifestyle, because obviously you do so much, but having known you socially as well, you also know how to switch off and enjoy yourself. Do you have any recommendations or tips for young dentists out there who are, as you say, in that grind, and how to keep that work-life balance as you try and learn and build up your skill set?
Definitely. You didn't pre-plan this question.
I didn't. I just thought of it. It's a good one.
So, I mean, I can only really speak to my experience. So I have always, travel is my thing. And I have always felt that I was working to be able to enjoy my love for travel. And so for me, mentally, I always have to find that I'm better motivated when I sort of have the next trip planned in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
If I come home and I don't have something else, another trip planned, then that just doesn't sit well with me.
And then you just feel like, what are you working towards? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I find that is a great motivator. I think also finding people who can, you know, a bit like you and I, we have another friend, Dr. Bianca Volpato, and we sort of based our friendship in dentistry. That's how we met.
Yes.
And so we allow time to sort of vent about those dental related things, but then also separating ourselves and not just getting so focused on those things as well. So I think having a balance in having your focus on your career and having your focus on dentistry, but also being able to step away is very important. I think one of the things I like the most about our career is once you finish at the end of the day, you know, there aren't often emails to chase or things to follow up. So I find it quite easy to shut off. Although once you get into practice ownership, that does change. It definitely gets trickier to have that work-life balance once you go down the practice ownership path. But for me, it's been about travel and just making sure that you give yourself time to switch off and separate from what you're doing. And when you're going to CPD courses and doing those sorts of things, if I'm there for an entire weekend, like a Saturday and a Sunday at a CPD course, I'll still try to make time to not work on the Monday, for example, to yeah. still have that time for rest. Like as you get older, I think you realize that
you are very good at that, at that work-life balance and saying, okay, I've done this. And so now I'm going to take time for me.
Yes. And I think that is really important because I think there are I know so many dentists, particularly I'm 10 years out now. So you get to that point around maybe 8 or 9 years where burnout is a real risk. Yeah. And a real problem in dentistry. I think it's getting a little bit better that it's sort of being talked about, like mental health and burnout is being talked about a little bit more now. But it certainly wasn't for a really long time. And so I know yes. a lot of dentists who have just hit that point where they just can't hack dentistry anymore.
Yeah.
It is really intense and it can be quite isolating, particularly if you're in a small practice.
Mm.
Again, I've been very lucky. I've always worked in group practices with lots of clinicians that have been very well supported, but I completely understand that's not everyone's narrative.
Yeah.
So finding that work-life balance, and it doesn't have to be travel, like whatever your passion is,
whatever your thing is. Yeah.
Yours is renovating at the moment.
Yeah. Mine's renovating and I know calls from the plumber in between patients. But I think, you know, what you're saying before about having the network of one of the things that works so well with your friendship, yours and my friendship, is that we can talk dental and get each other and we can have a little vent, but then also we can still then go and enjoy the rest of our time and our friendship together. And it's so nice for me that if I've had a tricky case or a patient or something, I can call you up and then just we can talk about it and then we can, or you help me to go right, okay, on to the next thing. And that's probably the experience that you have, that you can kind of help me to debrief. So I don't know, everyone go and get yourself a Lauren. She's mine. But no, I think you seriously hit that on the head there.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a tricky one, and there are lots of things to juggle. But I think, and I think actually the other thing I didn't mention is that I moved to a 9-day fortnight a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
and so just finding that balance of, and I think when I did it was sort of when I was moved more into surgery and operating, and so those surgical,
yes.
you know, we're starting earlier, and they're pretty intense. Although funnily enough, now I'm finding that being in theatre where it's nice and quiet and I don't have to do much talking can actually be less intense than consulting days where you've got to do a lot of talking. So it chops and changes. But because those days were longer and sort of a bit harder on the body, I cut that to that sort of second Friday, and that's been quite good. The other thing too is that I injured my back a couple of years ago. I had herniated discs and couldn't work for a period of time. And that related quite a lot to the way that I was working in ergonomics.
Yes.
So now I work standing up full time, which the nurses hate, but they know if they're nursing for me, that's what they have to do. And so part of the 9-day fortnight was also just like longevity of the body and finding how much I could work without it being too problematic for my back as well. So,
yes.
And then of course, combined with physio and all of those things. So the other key message I think I'd say to young dentists is just be really aware of your ergonomics. And there are actually, again, you know, I've spoken a lot about engaging the right people and the right advice. And there are even ergonomic specialists who will come to your clinic, watch you work, and then advise you on what type of chair they recommend, how they, you know, your stance, all these different things. So just if there's something that you don't know about, find someone who knows about it and who can teach you about it and who can advise you on it.
Yeah.
Obviously, don't just go and listen to, you know, anyone willy-nilly. Make sure that the person is, you know, well-regarded and they come recommended. But look after your back. Please look after your neck and back.
Yes.
That's a one-way ticket to ending your career very quickly if you don't.
Yeah, I didn't realize that you weren't able to work for a period of time as well. That's, serious.
It just makes you I think until you have an injury that stops you from working, you just feel a little bit invincible.
Mm.
And then once that happens, you realize the importance of, you know, I'm at Kiza doing physio every single week. Now
yes.
I'm able to push out to once a fortnight because the physio is
happening.
But, you know, you've got to put in the work to maintain your body in the same way you've got to put in the work to maintain your mind and making sure you're not getting burnt out and you've got things outside work and you've got work-life balance. Yes. So,
And I think, yeah, I think that's actually a really nice point to end on for a lot of young dentists out there, and maybe not even young dentists. Oh, there goes my AirPod. Maybe just, you know, anybody out there is just, yeah, the work-life balance and giving it your all at your day-to-day, but then also taking time for yourself, your family, your hobbies.
And if you think that there's something that you don't know a lot about or you want to know more about, just ask. And, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help if you're struggling with neck pain or back pain or you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't be too proud to ask for help.
Yes.
Because no question is too silly. And I think people get nervous to ask things, but I've just always asked. That seems to have worked.
That's why you're here where you are. Yeah, that's brilliant. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for coming on and being my first guest for my CPD Junkie series. We've got a few more episodes coming up in the next couple of months, so stay tuned. If you have any feedback for us or you have any ideas about some questions that you'd like to hear, please just send them through to us. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Maddie.
Thanks, Lauren. Bye.